Next, let's talk about the phenomenon of negative intentions. You'll want to ask, is there a negative intention that is directly affecting my client at this time? If the answer is yes, you'll want to ask, is there a negative intention placed upon my client? Now, if the answer to that is no, you'll want to ask, is there a negative intention placed by my client? So any soul, positive or negative, can place a negative intention. A negative intention is a concentration of ill wishes with a lot of emotional energy behind them. So generally, we are really angry at someone because we feel they've done something wrong, usually something wrong to us or done something wrong that really affects us. So we are really angry. And now we throw an intention at them like, well, I hope he breaks your heart within the year. Or I hope your business fails. Or, you know what? I hope that you're never happy. That is setting a negative intention for someone. Now, negative intentions are very common, and they're also very common attachment mechanisms for attaching souls. Negative intentions can connect the people involved for a lot of lifetimes. You know, people don't realize they're placing a negative intention. It happens very unconsciously. They're just angry, and they're wishing someone harm because they're hurt or in fear or disempowerment. And the truth is, people do make mistakes, and we end up participating in the consequences of their choices because they're family members or they're close to us. It happens all the time that someone else's mistake becomes a mess that we have to clean up. Now, a negative intention definitely doesn't take hold whenever someone wishes us harm. As always, nobody can do anything to us. This is something we do to ourselves. We have to make choices that indicate that we were in the wrong, that we feel guilty, or otherwise agree with the energy of the negative intention in order for it to become a part of our divine soul blueprint. Remember, these kinds of agreements are ongoing relationship dynamics. So we actually have to take action in a way that agrees with the negative intention that the other person just sort of threw our way. So in other words, we must act as if we deserve that negative intention in order for it to take hold. That's the choice we make that allows for the negative intention. Now, just feeling guilty won't do it. If we just feel guilty, but we just go about our business the way we always do, there's no new action. We really have to change our actions in a way that agrees that, yes, we were wrong. Maybe by trying to make it up for that person, maybe trying to correct some perceived mistake, right? So we're doing something, and then we'll continue to act that way because, especially if this obviously is a past life negative intention, you know, we'll have continued that pattern of choice all the way through that incarnation. So for example, a set of parents might place a negative intention on their daughter of shame for taking a lover before she gets married. But it's only when she makes choices out of shame, for example, breaking up with that lover to appease her parents or keeping their continuing relationship a secret, that's when the negative intention can take hold. So basically, she would have to act as if she has something to actually be ashamed of in order for the negative intention to take hold. And in order for that negative intention to continue to have a hold on her, she would continue to act as if she has something to be ashamed of for the rest of that incarnation. So then maybe she is constantly asking her parents to keep it a secret when she does get married to someone else. She keeps that secret from whoever she ends up marrying. She acts as if she has something in her past that she has to be ashamed of, so maybe she tries to be like a super good wife, right? That kind of thing. So these are patterns of choice that basically state, oh my God, I should be ashamed. And I have something in my past that is, you know, a source of shame for me. And then it just continues and continues, and that pattern never gets corrected. If that person never goes, you know what? We were in love. We did what Mother Nature has us do, and I'm not ashamed of it. If that person ever woke up and decided to not be ashamed and stopped making choices based on that pattern, then her divine soul blueprint would no longer reflect that negative intention. So a client with a negative intention of shame would continue to feel as if what they're doing is somehow wrong and then feel the need to keep parts of their lives hidden. Now, we will often find ourselves in present life relationships and circumstances that are similar, and certainly that are energetically the same, as the past life situations that instigated the negative intention. That's because we are, of course, continuing the same patterns of choice and therefore generating the same karma. Now, you'll learn how to uncover the full story behind a negative intention in our next lesson, but it really often happens that I'll tell a client the story of how it all came about, and our client will go, "Oh my God, that's exactly what happened to me in this lifetime." That is not uncommon, especially with negative intentions, but we attract the same situation over and over because we've created the karmic pattern and made it a part of our divine soul blueprint. So for example, a business partner in a past life may have placed a negative intention of self-doubt on your client after they made a bad business decision that cost both of them their fortune. Now that's understandable. If someone loses all of our money and we go broke as a result, we're going to be really, really angry. Right? We're probably going to throw an intention at them that's like, "Well, I hope that you don't go making any more rash decisions. I want you to think and think 10 times before you ever do anything else, because you clearly don't know what you're doing," right? You would probably have a nice yelling session at that person, and deservedly so. But now, if your client, that their business partner now keeps triple, quadruple checking, checks in with everybody around them. "My God, do you think I should do this? Do you think I should do this? Do you think I should do this?" Because now they're terrified of making another mistake. And they continue that pattern. That's what allows that negative intention to really take hold. If that person were like, "You know what? I'm human. I made a mistake. Yes, I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to move on." And they didn't engage in a pattern of perpetual self-doubt, that negative intention wouldn't take hold. So just understand, sometimes they also take hold for like, you know, a very short period of time, and then we just move on from them. So a lot of people resolve these on their own within a lifetime. They really become issues when we continue the pattern for an entire incarnation. But now this client will consistently second guess themselves lifetimes later and not trust themselves, and making them susceptible to more bad decisions, of course, and being taken advantage of because they're constantly asking other people to tell them what to do. Now, at times, you may find that the client placed the negative intention. Now, what will happen is that they will continue the pattern of acting as if they have been wronged. So, if your client were the business partner that placed the intention of self-doubt, they would now constantly micromanage everybody. They would not want to give anybody responsibility over any major decisions. They would be like a lone ranger trying to do everything themselves. They wouldn't trust anybody to have independence in their decision-making, that sort of thing. All right, so it really comes back to us when we place a negative intention on another. It is an agreement that is made between two people. It creates a relationship dynamic that is negative for both parties involved. Now, usually negative intentions take place between people who are close to one another, such as family members, business partners, lovers. That's because we really don't care what strangers think of us. We usually choose to allow negative intentions to take root that are placed by the people we care most about and whose opinion very much matters to us. Negative intentions can be past or present life. Normally they are past life, but occasionally you'll find a present life one. Negative intentions can be placed on us by an individual or a whole group of individuals. So a single negative intention can be an attachment mechanism for multiple attaching souls. So sometimes you'll find that there's a negative intention placed on your client And there's like five attaching souls. That's because that negative intention was placed by their entire family. And it can be different groups of people, but usually it's a collection of family members. That's really, really common. It could be parents, right? And so you'd have two attaching souls, one attachment mechanism. So don't be surprised if you do run into that. Now, you'll discover the energetic statement of a negative intention by using your programs and energetic statements chart once you get to lesson 8. And we'll also talk more about how to uncover the specific circumstances surrounding a negative intention. Let's talk about bargains, which is another attachment mechanism. So you'll want to ask, is there a soul level bargain currently affecting the client? And did it originate in a past life? Most of the time it will, but if not, did it originate in present life? Now, bargains are agreements made between two people engaging in an exchange for personal gain. So it's not about blame. It's not saying you wronged me. It's saying I've got something and I know you want it. And the other person saying, yeah, I do. All right. So usually the client has to sacrifice, though, for the perceived gain they desire. Usually bargains are made for money, status, or power. And the client may, so for example, marry someone for money and give up authentic love for financial abundance. A client may give up their integrity for power or their freedom for fame. So there's always something the client has to sacrifice. Usually we make a bargain with someone we see as an authority that can deliver what we want into our lives. These bargains remain mostly unspoken, but they are fulfilled at the level of action. For example, maybe we want to use someone for their business connections. You know, if we think, hey, they're really connected, they're really successful, let me get in good with them and they'll help me out. Well, they go, oh, you want my help? Here you go. I will help you. And we're all excited. Right? Yay, okay, I just used this person for their business connections. Well, but then next thing you know, a few months later, we're then asked to engage maybe in illegal business dealings for our benefactor. And we might actually do that because we know otherwise their help will be withdrawn. Often bargains start when we use someone as a shortcut to our own goals. And then we become dependent on their assistance. That's when we find ourselves willing to make negative choices for the sake of continuing the arrangement. So it really starts when we want to use people. That's where these bargains start, where we see someone and we think of them as an opportunity. We think of that person as a way to get where we want to go. So we are trying to use that person. So, of course, it shouldn't be a shocker when they in turn use us, right? Makes sense. We've created a transactional relationship with them. Why wouldn't they try to use us back? But what we often will find in a bargain is that really we don't have that much to gain, and we find ourselves kind of in a pickle where we can't get out of this agreement anymore. Now that we've started engaging with that person, we find it very, very hard to leave because, of course, we are getting something out of it. So we kind of entrench ourselves into these bargains we make. All right, just like if we marry someone for their money and they're aware and they're like, that's fine, I'm marrying you for your family name. Great, that is a bargain. But once we're used to a certain lifestyle, we don't want to give that up anymore. Now we're dependent on the other person. So it is a very negative agreement. It will cause us to make negative choices, but it is definitely mutual. People are using each other, but there's always this energy of sacrifice, and that's what makes it so negative for us when we enter into a bargain. There's always something essential about our divine self-expression that we have to sacrifice in order to stay in that bargain we made. So as with other negative agreements, these dynamics will continue at the level of choice, for the remainder of both parties' incarnations and so become a part of their divine soul blueprint. Now, clients will find themselves continuing the perception that they need others to get where they want to go, and they will continue the pattern of sacrifice through negative choices as well. Bargains, usually past life, they can be present life as well, and they definitely serve as an attaching mechanism for attaching souls, and you will uncover the full story behind these in our next lesson. Now let's talk about constraints. You'll want to ask, is there a constraint currently affecting my client? Did it originate in a past life? And if no, did it originate in present life? Now, we create constraint situations when we surrender our free will to the will of another person. So basically, we choose to let our free will be constrained or limited by somebody else. In a constrained situation, we basically buy into the perception that we don't have a choice or that someone else knows better than we do. And that could be due to a controlling parent who wants to control the life of their child. It could be an emotionally or physically abusive spouse who tells the partner that, you know, you can't live without me, you have no other place to go, that sort of thing. Constraints take root when we do what the other person wants against our own free will. So we don't want to do something, but they want us to do it. And so we just say, yes, fine. I'll do the thing that I do not want to do because, and you know, the rationalization is, you're making me. They're not holding a gun to our heads. They're not. We are choosing to surrender our free will, but we definitely rationalize it with this whole, oh, I don't have a choice. Somebody else made me do something. So for example, if we marry someone we don't want to marry in order to satisfy the wishes of our parents, that can result in a constraint. If we prostitute ourselves because our spouse wants to make money off us, this can result in a constraint. So constraint situations are very common. They can be past and present life and serve as an attachment mechanism for attaching souls. And they can be placed by both individuals or by groups. So again, you can have one constraint serve as an attachment mechanism for two attaching souls, such as when, you know, our parents are placing a constraint on us. And of course, you know, it's not something that happens to us. We buy into the idea that we have to do what they say. And these are really, really common attachment mechanisms, the negative intentions, bargains, and constraints. They're just very commonplace. Now, we usually surrender our free will to the people we are close to and perceive ourselves as dependent on, such as parents and spouses. We might also enter into a constraint with some sort of religious authority, sometimes an educational authority. And constraints are really like energetic straitjackets. Once we choose to surrender our free will, it just appears as if certain choices are not available to us because we decided that those choices are not available to us. We're the powerful creators of our own reality. If we decide, I don't have a choice, then our reality becomes, you don't have a choice. The universe just goes, as you wish. We make it a part of our divine soul blueprint that certain choices are not available anymore. And so we don't attract their availability. It's not like the universe can argue with our divine soul blueprint. So as with other negative agreements, we will continue to surrender our free will and make choices we don't actually want to make for the remainder of the lifetime in which the constraint originated. Now, when we enter into constraint, we truly believe we have no other choice. We rationalize our way there. We always do. But we usually enter constraints because we're terrified that the other party involved will withdraw love or safety, or it's just not convenient and we want to maintain dependence. I mean, if our parents say to us, you are going to marry this person whether you like it or not, or you're on your own, we're kicking you out of the house, we have a choice. We can say, great, I'll find my own way in the world. Right? If you're going to love me that conditionally, bye-bye. See ya. That is the choice we can make, but it's very inconvenient and it's not very safe. And a lot of us human beings are wired to try to maintain a sense of safety. So we often surrender our free will to others in order to have them continue to love us, even though it's highly conditional love, or mostly in order to stay safe. And sometimes we're just plain lazy. We just don't want to deal with the inconvenience of making our own decisions, because that comes with being responsible, even, right? When we take the power to make our own choice, we are also then responsible for ourselves, which usually is very congruent, but, you know, some people would rather choose dependence. They really would, to this day. Sometimes we enter into constraints because the alternative is just socially uncomfortable as well. It might be embarrassing, right? What will people think? I mean, we do care about that stuff. Clients with a constraint present will still tend to surrender their free will to a perceived external authority. Sometimes they will simply feel more comfortable having others make certain choices for them, which, by the way, can result in a lot of blame down the road. They'll often make choices out of obligation or because they feel they should. And usually they'll have very reasonable sounding rationalizations in place for why they have to do something that they don't want to do. They'll have the perception that some choices are just not available to them. They'll have this sort of I can't mechanism running, even though that's really not rational or reasonable or true at all. And constraints will attract situations and circumstances into our lives that seem to limit us. But that's because we've chosen that limitation ourselves. We've chosen to disempower ourselves. So constraints can show up as placed on your client, but can also have been placed on another by your client. So sometimes your client is the one constraining somebody else. Now, if your client is placing the constraint, they will constantly find themselves trying to assert their will over others, and they will basically be a control freak. In one way or another, depending on how the situation originated, they will constantly try to manage somebody else's free will. They will try to control them and manipulate them. Now, they'll have a rationalization for why they're doing it for that person's own good, right? Of course, we can rationalize anything, but they will basically constantly try to control other people in some way, depending on the story behind the constraint. So again, this is something that can, this is a really negative choice for our client when they're trying to control the free will of others. First of all, it's very hard to do consistently. It takes a lot of energy and manipulation and staying on top of people, and it's not appropriate. Interference with someone else's free will is truly always a negative choice.